to be sure that they're muted. And let's begin with the Sufi invocation. Those of you that know it, let's say it together. And those that don't, just listen to the words, let them wash over your being. And I want to do this once, and then we'll begin with the Sufi invocation again, but I have a little interim here at the beginning of class that I some things that I'd like to share. So let's first do this Sufi invocation together. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So here we invite all the illuminated souls into our presence. Those whether known or unknown to the world, may they be here to guide us, to open our hearts, to illuminate our steps along the way. And I first want to say a few words. I know that our dear friend Nurse Salima and community have undergone a loss. It was a sudden and natural death of your dear friend and companion for many years, Ron. And I just want to call Ron into this gathering, because I remember him sitting here in our living room. You made a journey from Colombia, and you both were here. And I remember his beautiful, gentle in terms of his humility, I would say, and also his strength. You could feel his strength, like you could really lean. I mean, I always felt I could really lean into him, and I'm sure others felt that way as well. And he had a seemed so much like he had so much equanimity. He accepted people and loved them right where they were. That was my sense of him, and always had such warmth. And while the sudden loss is such a shock to all of those that knew Ron and were close to him, I guess if we all had a choice, what a way to go. You go out for your walk and bam, you're looking at heaven and you're in heaven. So may his soul rest in peace. May it be surrounded with light. And those of you that know the practice, Om Mani Padme Hum, can we say a round of manis for him? This is the mantra that represents the six perfections and the six realms of existence. And it is the mantra that is done for a passing soul or consciousness. And if we could say that together, the mantra goes Om Mani Padme Hum. And I'm gonna start slow, and then I'll go faster the way it's done at the monasteries with the Tibetans. So don't feel like you need to catch up, you can just listen. But remember, this is to bless him along the way through all the realms of existence, that his soul may find peace and be illuminated. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Money to me, 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 So if you'd like to keep this practice up, those that knew Ron or who didn't, I mean, could there ever be enough manis for the suffering in the world for those souls that are passing along into the other realms? One of the things that His Holiness the Dalai Lama taught us was that when you use your beads, you bring your thumb down like this into, and it comes towards your heart, but it also is like this motion is like the sort of the the control, the self-control, we could say the oppression that has negative connotations, but I hope you'll get the gist of negative inclinations and negative karma. So we're like stamping that out for Ron, whatever might be there, for ourselves, for all the beings of the six realms. So you can make that motion with your beads. And so thank you, Noor Salima, for letting us share that. It's a heart opener to feel grief. It opens our hearts and shifts things in ways that we can't even imagine. And so thank you for letting us share that. Thank you for letting us share Ron. And thank you for opening our hearts. And now for another kind of heart opener, our dear friends, Gemma and Hamid, Tom, Harper, let's see, Terry, Lynn, Gemma, Erickson Harper, and Tom, Hamid Harper. I think today's your anniversary, am I right? Can you unmute? How long has it been?
It's been 28 years.
That is kind of unbelievable.
And it's been a short time.
It's been a short time. You both are doing great. I'm so happy. I'm so happy for you. And I had the privilege, along with Alaudi Nottinger, of marrying them. So that one stuck. And we're happy about it. What a great couple. I call them Terry's given name at birth was Terry. And of course, Tom is Tom. I call them the TNT couple. Like, you know, explosive, dynamic. So love you both and congratulations. And many, many more. I hope we'll be meeting like this or holographically or however we'll be meeting in the future in the next 28. Congratulations. Thank you for sharing it with us. And if we could begin with the Sufi invocation again. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And with this, we invoke all the illuminated souls and we remember to count ourselves amongst them, for we are on that journey towards our own illumination. So today we continue on this journey of unlearning, and what a journey it is. I hope it's helpful to all of you. It's been quite an extraordinary journey for myself and sort of assessing my outlook and my perspective on things. which are ever-changing and ever-polarizing in our everyday life. But this class maybe will help us to some extent and to look at things differently and to look at things from another's point of view. So this class is, we've titled it Unlearning 4, and it's from the Sufi message volume called Sufi Mysticism. And the title of this paper or this teaching is The Law of the Mystic. And I think I titled it, I don't remember. Anyway, the words are in here. I titled it something else, but those words are also in here. So these are the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan. And again, I can only suggest to you, I know myself, if I just relax and let the words enter my mind stream without grasping, it just becomes our own. And hopefully, I don't know if we'll have a little time, but maybe we will for discussion. So let me be on my way. The law of the mystic is the understanding of the law. The law of the mystic is the understanding of the law. The average man says, this person's got the better me, and I'll show them. The mystic's outlook is different. The mystic believes that no one can get away with anything in this world without paying for it. For every gain, the food one eats, every drop one drinks, every breath of air one takes, there is a tax to be paid. One is continuously paying, and yet one does not know it. This shows that behind it all, there is a perfect justice working. A perfect justice working. And we've had questions over the last few months about political issues and racial issues and economic issues and health issues. But here it says, this shows that behind it all, there is a perfect justice working. One cannot get the slightest comfort and pleasure without having to pay for it. And every pain has its own reward, though few seem to realize this. Therefore, behind all this falsehood and injustice, behind all this falsehood and injustice, we see that there's a perfect wisdom working continually, day and night. The mystic sees it in everything with open eyes. It is a great miracle. For in the first place, the mystical life is a puzzle. In the second place, a bewilderment. In the third place, a miracle. And that was the title, Puzzle, Bewilderment. Puzzle, Bewilderment, and Miracle. So there are these stages, and we'll talk about that further on. But I thought this is enough to contemplate and maybe even wrestle with, because we might not, these words might confuse us. We might feel puzzled, bewildered, but maybe we can work through that towards a miracle. And there might be something later in the class that I'd like to share that may be helpful as well. But for here, I'd like to pause, and I'd like to work with two wazifas, sacred names of God. And one you'll be familiar with because we've been working with it, and that's Wasi. But I'd like to pair it with Aziz. And if you remember, Wasi is like this a sense of expansion, a boundlessness, an all-encompassing, an ever-reaching, endless boundary. There's no boundary. It is that sacred name that can help us to release old boundaries. So if before we could only go this far, then we can go this far. and then we can go this far, and our thinking can become this big, and our attitude can become this big, so we can keep increasing and be boundless in that. See the kitty there, they always come, they love to come for the teachings, don't they? And wasi is also an antidote for habitual sort of thinking or patterns. It helps us overcome these and sort of emerge beyond them, almost like those beautiful Russian dolls opening up, or the peeling of layers of an onion to get to that pearl of the sweetness at the center. So we just keep expanding and expanding. And pairing it with aziz is going to be very interesting, and I'd be curious how people respond to this. Now, let me tell you a little bit about aziz, and I'm going to quote some passages from the book called Physicians of the Heart. And it said there that it's helpful to invoke Ya Aziz because the ego's ultimate power is what has been tested. We are tested with the life's crucible. So this ego of ours that wants to put things in a box or just look at them a certain way, or how is it that this could be happening? This doesn't seem to be real justice. It seems unfair. It seems to lack civility. It seems unethical. But that's part of the crucible of life. At least it is for the mystic. And so Ya Aziz is what the ego is. What the ego is always trying to do, and we know this is so true, it's trying to take command, and it's trying to replace God. So instead of the center of our mandala, instead of it being God and us remembering everything's emanating from God and everything's returning to God, we put ourselves there, and we try to figure it out. And so that becomes the ultimate stand. And this is a quote from the Physicians of the Heart. Since there is no God, I'll be God. And I'll be the most powerful being in the universe. I mean, when we get into these states of worry, condemnation of others, and so forth, we become that. We think we're the most powerful being in the universe. We're not. Actually, that attitude's very exhausting. This is from Physicians in the Heart. And in fact, it weakens the ego because it thinks it has to do everything. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Anyone? Anyone else think that? We have to do everything? Gosh, I'm glad some of you aren't raising your hand. It's not, it's a good thing. You're farther along on the path, certainly, than I am. It doesn't let anyone else do a job. And it's always afraid. Now, that I'm not sure about, but maybe. Afraid the job isn't going to get done. But it's a very interesting perspective to look at when we worry about every little thing. The fear is the source of its grandiosity, of its claim, I'm the ultimate one. And such a predicament can be deflated by invocation of Ya Aziz. So this proclamation of this, the highest being, the most beautiful and magnificent being, Ya Aziz. We offer things up to this being. And we're going to couple that with Ya Aziz, Ya Wasi, Ya Aziz, Ya Wasi, Ya Aziz, Ya Wasi. Okay? Is it clear? So let's start with just 11, Ya Aziz, Ya Wasi. And maybe let's do that on the tone to feel the vibration. And I'm not saying Wasi quite right. That's how I learned it. But when I listen to the true Arabic pronunciation, it's Wasi. It's like a little at the end. So we'll try to do that. But I think God knows our intention. So either way, I'm sure it's going to be just fine. Ya Aziz. Ya Wasi. Ya Aziz. Ya Wasi. Ya Aziz, Ya Wasia, 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 Ya Aziz, Ya Wasia. Now just spoken. Ya Aziz, Ya Wasia, 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 Ya Aziz. And breathe in Aziz and out Wasia. Aziz bringing us to the center, the ultimate center, the power of the being of the entire universe, that divine source. We feel that within our being. We commune with it, we align with it, we identify with it, but we don't think we are it. We just feel that connection by breathing in Aziz. And then as we breathe out Wasia, we expand. Like stretching something that gets, you know, like if you make noodles and you just work with the dough and you keep stretching it. It just gets looser and looser. And that's what we want to do. We want those boundaries to become, at least during our spiritual practice and our seeking greater wisdom, perhaps understanding the deeper levels of justice, we want the boundaries to expand so that our thinking and our understanding can be encompassing. That's what Wasi means, the all-encompassing. There's room for it all. We can include it all. We actually are it all. And so we make room for that. So we're not rejecting it and thereby rejecting parts of our own being. So we breathe in Aziz and we breathe out Asiya. Just breathing in. Ya Aziz, Ya Wasia. So I read again from this teaching. Therefore, behind all falsehood and injustice, we see that there's a perfect wisdom working continually day and night. The mystic sees it in everything with open eyes. That is the great miracle. For in the first place, the mystical life is a puzzle. In the second place, a bewilderment. And in the third place, a miracle. Murshid goes on to explain it this way. It is a puzzle when the law is not understood. A very interesting puzzle. And you know how it just seems to be in human nature that we like complexities. And some of our teachers, Joe Miller would say, we get more stinking from thinking than drinking, but to feel is for real. And Murshid Samuel Lewis always said that we are looking for complexities in our lives. But here it's saying that the puzzle is because we don't understand and we're actually interested in the puzzle. And there's no better game than to be occupied with that puzzle, to try to understand it, to try to solve it. And it's so interesting that there's no sport or game that can be compared with it. So it becomes a fascination of the mind. We think we're doing something by thinking. It's okay to do that too. It's part of a process. We're not saying to bypass that or that there's anything wrong with that. One should question things. One should look at the puzzle. And then we go on to bewilderment. Then it is a bewilderment. Because the difference between everybody, the way everybody else looks at life and how it is in reality, there comes a stage when a person says, either they are all mad or I'm all mad. But someone must be mad. I see it, at least Gemma's chuckling at that. I think we've said that to each other before. Am I mad? Are you mad? Is everybody else mad? Who doesn't think that sometimes? Doesn't it even seem, you turn on the news, doesn't it seem like the world's gone mad? There's our bewilderment. What's going on? And what can we do about it? That's the other question. Then Murshid goes on to say, the mystic can see from the point of view of everyone else as well as one's own point of view. And they may be quite contrary. That's okay. They are, they will be. And he says, for instance, in his teaching, Christ says, if anyone asks you for your coat, give him or her your overcoat also. And the worldly person says, that's not practical. If someone asked me every day for my coat, I'd be buying a new coat all the time. I mean, that's the practical point of view, right? And Murshid says, however, think of this, that pure thought, what is pure thought? It's the energy of thinking, perhaps without judgment. It's just the energy. Pure thought, goodwill, our service, our time, whatever we give, it's never lost. It comes back to us according to our willingness to give. It comes back to us 1,000-fold. That is why one is never the loser by being generous. One only gains. Now, this is very interesting, because here Murshid, you know, if you read his biography, you know that he traveled throughout all the Himalayas, and he studied with teachers from all different traditions. This is purely from the Tibetan tradition, the Buddhist tradition, I'd say. Not Tibetan, but Buddhist tradition. And this is the law of karma. This is the law of give and take. This is the law of Jesus Christ that said, what you sow, you shall reap. It's about that. that goes around comes around. That goes around comes around. And it's interesting because from the Buddhist perspective, it may not be apparent in this lifetime, but in one lifetime or another, it will be. And if we're quick karma kids, if we're turning it quickly through our practice, it comes back just like that, like a rubber ball, in almost instantly. Here's another thing that I've learned from my Buddhist studies, that the minute one gives something and has an ounce of regret or complains in any way or feels like they've done something special or, you know, they're patting themselves on the back, all the goodness is gone from it. It is finished and exhausted. It eradicates it. They also say, interestingly enough, that one moment of anger can also eradicate, eliminate all of the good karma that's one has as a surplus. So there's a reason to keep practicing because we can exhaust it as fast as we create it. So watch our thoughts, watch our speech, watch our actions. Be mindful, very important. And we may not be perfect, but we may perfectly attain to that perfection. Every day, make a commitment. And so this aspect of generosity, this giving out pure thought, goodwill, our service, our time, all of this we give willingly without really asking anything in return. That's the other part, to have an expectation. If I do this, then I will receive this. Or if I do this, someone will do something for me. No, it's just not that way. In fact, we should constantly be dedicating whatever good we do immediately. That's the way of saving it. It's like saving the file on the computer. There's one little caveat, that if we remember to dedicate whatever we do for the benefit of others, then we save it. It doesn't get so easily exhausted. So being mindful of that. If there's any good in what I'm doing, if there's any good in this act that I think is kindness or generosity or whatever that may be, say, may all beings benefit from it. And what's more is I give the goodness of that for all beings to be happy and free from suffering. So let us do this practice, Kareem, Kareem. And it's a beautiful practice. I remember Murshida Vera at our camps and also retreats. Sometimes I'd go to California to do Palm Sunday retreats with her. She would take us outside and she would have us touch the bushes and the flowers and take in the essence of what their generosity is, what they're giving to the world in their beauty, in their breath, in their freshness, and to bring that in and to offer adoration for that as well. So when we touch the, you know, here, it's so wonderful in the mornings to walk barefoot on the grass, to feel that coolness because it's so unbelievably hot and humid here right now, but that little bit of freshness and that life coming through that damp, dewy grass, how generous the moisture is in the grass is to give that to us. And Parker, aka Sparky, I mean, on his walks, he just loves it. He lays down in that grass in a cool, he's looking at me now, in the cool shade, and then he rolls on his back and he just rolls and rolls and rolls. And you can just see that he's so enjoying that and worshiping those moments. So that's what we do here. And this is the kind of compassion that goes everything, everywhere without exception. It's not the kind of compassion that says, I like you, I'll do something nice for you, I don't, you forget it. It's like everywhere. It's not even possible to not be generous. And it can be found in a particular thing and in everything, just like the beautiful flowers and the leaves on the trees and the light shimmering on the water, and all those things are kind of generosity, that a bountiful amount of it. And it's like a flowing stream of water from a never-ending well. It just keeps giving. And if we could be like that, how beautiful would that be? It would be such a blessing to the world. So we say this, we'll do this practice. Ya Kareem. And think of all the things that are so generous in our, generous gifts in our lives. And we can be thankful for those things. It's good to count our blessings. That's an act of generosity too. The gift of a smile, a kind word, a nod to a stranger. Those are all acts of generosity. Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem. Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem, Ya Kareem. Now just breathe in and breathe out on the whisper, Kareem, bringing in the generosity and bounty around us, and giving it back again. Kareem, 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 Kareem. And now on the breath. In and out, Kareem. Ya Kareem. Ya Kareem. I don't mean to make you very full, but there are a few things I'd like to read. That concludes this teaching. But I'd like to add to that a teaching by Burchett Samuel Lewis. If you follow the Bull of Saki and his commentary, you came across this week, and I think it bears repeating. And so if you'll allow me to share that. So these are the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan. The heart of every person, both good and bad, is the abode of God, and care should be taken never to wound anyone by word or act. You can see how this relates to this teaching. And then this is Murshid Samuel Lewis's commentary. If there were not some good in every human heart, life in the physical body would not be, because the blood would be carrying poison to every cell and muscle and gland. We even see some strange deaths called heart failure and given other names, which result from psychic poison impregnating the physical body. So important to think about what we're allowing to go in. Back to Murshid Sam's words. Every harsh human thought immediately affects two fluids, the vital fluid and energy called prana, which flows in and out with the breath, and the universal life, love, essence, which holds the very earth together, which is the heart energy. The harsh thought through prana affects chiefly the mind of another, for it is directed towards others. So here again, watch our thoughts, and where are they going, and what effect do they have? But such also is true of the nature of prana, the breath. The exhalation of the breath so operates that it touches the mental body of each person in its course. And whatsoever it gives to another, it gives to oneself. So those thoughts that we may be projecting outward have their influence inwardly on us. So we want to be mindful and attentive and give great care. Murshid Sam's words. The effect of the heart energy, which may be considered the universal life force, is to strike every human being upon earth, even to affect others upon earth and those in the unseen. The proper use of this heart energy is called Ishq by the Sufis, Karuna by the Buddhist, and Agape by the New Testament, which can be translated as selfless love. There's a difference here in that thoughts affect chiefly the thinker and the thing or person concerned in the thought, whereas the feeling of the heart energy affects the whole cosmic body, the universal human. The difference between thoughts, they affect chiefly the thinker and the thing or person concerned with thought or in the thought, whereas the feeling of the heart energy affects the whole cosmic body, the universal woman, universal human. I mean, is it empty wonder? Do you ever think about that, where you see images of the Chenrezig, the Buddha of compassion, the hands here at the heart, and he's holding a jewel at the heart, the center of the heart. When we see the Sacred Heart of Jesus and Mary, what do we see? I think it's like this. They're pointing to the heart, and the hand is going up. So we see this. We see this gesture. We're always talking about the heart, the feeling, which Murshid Sam's calling the heart energy, and this universal consciousness, the cosmic body, and they're pointing. The way to heaven is through the heart. In this way, by our feelings and attitudes, we either raise or lower the whole humanity. Now let's think about this in this time of COVID. What is going on? Are we contributing to this illness of the earth and its inhabitants? We have to ask ourselves, can we shift this with our thoughts, with our feelings, with our love? One has to really contemplate. In this way, by our feelings and attitudes, we either raise or lower humanity. And so when Jesus Christ said, love ye one another, when Muhammad taught in the Quran that Allah created us out of clots of blood, it is a reference to the fact, the great truth of existence, the universal love energy. The master, the one that has control over things, maybe the elements we see, we hear this about the saints, control the atmosphere, the rain, the sun, the saint, the one that's the holiest of holy, the humble one. But also has great capacity to affect change through their love. And the Bodhisattva, the one who wishes all beings to cross over into enlightenment and waits at the doorway, shepherding all through before oneself. Okay, the master, the saint, the bodhisattva place their consciousness in this great stream, in this ocean of love. Ocean of love, Yahwasi, Yahwasi, Yahkarim, all the ocean of love, generosity. And by sending forth their thoughts of loving kindness, they benefit the whole humanity. You know, if we just sit and invoke the feeling of love and spread it out, that could bring about great change. When these thoughts are individualized, they reach a few. Otherwise, they reach many. This is the reason for the silence on the part of sages. So that's number one I wanted to share with you. This idea of love. Love you one another. It doesn't say love you one another that are easy to love. It says you love all beings. It's hot. It's not easy. It's not easy. Ram Dass used to say to his teacher, named Karoli Baba, he said, Baba, Babaji, you teach us. We have to love everyone. And he said, Ram Dass would say to Maharaji, I don't love these people. In fact, I don't like them. They irritate me, you know, when he was in the ashram in India. I don't like them at all. And Neem Karoli Baba, he'd say, he'd get that glint in his eye, Ram Dass, love everyone, serve everyone. But what kind of love are we talking about? This love that's conditional on agreeing with people, on liking their manner, on they're nice to us? No, it's not that kind of love at all. It's not sentimental and it's not emotional, it's universal. It's a higher form of love we're reaching for here. So let's think about that. Now, I'm going to read one more thing, then we'll have a little bit of time if you wish to talk. And I feel like I must share this and I must give credit also. I'm going to my files and I'm going to open something that I last week I was asked to give a sermon they asked me and I thought it was good to give it on judgment, justice, and understanding, and really those the evolution of judgment, understanding, and forgiveness. And so I shared something that our beloved sister, Sukaina, I don't see you right now on my screen, but I owe you so much for sharing this with me, and I want to thank you. And I think it illuminates this teaching in another way. So I'd like to share this reading with you. There is a poem that goes with it, and I can publish both along with this teaching as a PDF. But I want to read the narrative. And this is from Thich Nhat Hanh, who many of you know and have studied. And this is called Peace is Every Step. The Path of Mindfulness is in Everyday Life. And he writes the poem, and Sukaina, if you're there, can you unmute and remind us the name of the poem? I don't have it here.
Please call me by my true names.
Please call me by my true names. So this is the narrative that he gave after he wrote this. And thank you, Sukaina, so much. It's really, it's beautiful. So he says, in Plum Village, you know he lives there in France, in Plum Village, where I live in France, we receive many letters from refugee camps in Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, and the Philippines. Hundreds each week. It is very painful to read them, but we have to do it. We have to be in contact. We try our best to help. But the suffering is enormous. And sometimes we're discouraged. It is said that half the boat people die in the ocean. Only half arrive at the shores of Southeast Asia. And even then, they may not be safe. There are many young girls, boat people, who are raped by the sea pirates. Even though the United Nations and many countries try to help, the government of Thailand prevent that kind of piracy sea pirates continue to inflict much suffering on the refugees. One day we received a letter telling us about a young girl on a boat who was raped by a Thai pirate. She was only 12, and she jumped into the ocean and she drowned herself. When you first learn of something like that, you get angry at the pirate. You naturally take the side of the girl. As you look more deeply, you will see it differently. If you take the side of the little girl, then it's easy. You only have to take a gun and shoot the pirate. But we cannot do that. In my meditation, Thich Nhat Hanh says, in my meditation, I saw that if I had been born in the village of the pirate and raised in the same condition as he was, there's a great likelihood that I would have become a pirate. I saw that many babies are born along the Gulf of Siam, hundreds every day. And if we educators, social workers, politicians, and others do not do something about the situation in 25 years, a number of them will become sea pirates. That is certain. If you or I were born today in those fishing villages, we would become sea pirates in 25 years. If you take a gun and shoot the pirate, all of us are to some extent responsible for this state of affairs. After a long meditation, I wrote this poem, and that's the poem Call Me By My Names. In it, there are three people: the 12-year-old girl, the pirate, and me. Can we look at each other and recognize ourselves in each other? Wouldn't it be wiser to exercise self-restraint and self-control, politeness, kindness, sympathy, graciousness, and a worshipful attitude towards God, seeing that all beings are children of God, the good and the bad? So I have to ask myself these questions. Where am I? I am this, and I am that, and I am that person, the person that I see exercising poor judgment. I am that person, the person that I see being cruel to others. I am that person. I mean, we are, in the current situation, the policeman. We are George Floyd, that had his neck being crushed and his breath being stifled to death by the policeman. And we are ourselves as witnesses. We have to think about that. We're not separate from it. And we also have to look at the causes and conditions. They are not separate from what's happening in any one person's life or in the life of our world, ourselves. So if we look at things from this point of view that Thich Nhat Hanh's trying to point us to, we can perhaps be discerning, which I think is important to have discerning wisdom, discriminating wisdom, that's a Buddhist term, discriminating wisdom, to make good judgments. But those judgments should be made on our own actions, perhaps not on those of another, including our politicians and the situation in the world. Our energy may be better placed generating the sense of love and kindness and expressing that wherever we can and sending it through the breath into the atmosphere to that universal consciousness, a universal human, a universal beings, because humans are just part of it. So I hope this has been of benefit to you. And let me check my, it's almost 12, but I think I usually say the class will go to 12:15. If we could close with Khatoum right now, and then those of you that would like to stay and have some conversation or feedback, I'd most welcome it. And I send you my love and my good thoughts and my good wishes. Now and forevermore, may it be so. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men, women, all beings which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being.